Afternoon from the captain's chair. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair. It's one bell of the afternoon watch. The officer of the deck, who has just been relieved, has reported that the chronometers have been wound and made all of the other customary reports that are given right at the approach of noon, and has asked permission to strike eight bells on time. I gave that permission. I told him to make it so. And when the captain from the chair at noon says, make it so, that is the beginning of the new day. And it technically, theoretically, traditionally cannot start until he says, make it so. So I have said, make it so. A lot has happened to us in the last week, and I am going to leave those far better equipped to analyze and discuss all of the events and why they happened and who did it and who didn't do it and who didn't do what and so on. All I'm going to say is that I am ashamed as an American. And I am at least heartened that those who have taken the oath have, for the most part, fulfilled the conditions of that oath. They did not take it lightly and have fulfilled the conditions of that oath. But I always think when we get to one of these junctures, and we've had far too many of them in the last years, that when we get to one of these junctures, I think to myself, well, what the hell can I do? I sit here as an honored retiree. I no longer have any say in anything that goes on in my service. And I always come to the same conclusion, and it's the same conclusion that I've talked about here many times, and I'm going to talk about it one more time, and probably not for the last. And that is that each of us operates within our own small orbit. Each of us, or most of us, have people for whom we are responsible and accountable. Each of us has organizations to which we belong, and each of us has family connections. And within that small orbit, and for some of us it is larger than others, within that small orbit, what we can do is the very best that we can to fulfill those obligations which we have as the head of a family or as a politician in a small organization or as a member of a do-good, and that we have to be confident that the ripples that will go out from that work that we do will carry on and ripple out farther and farther and farther. One of the things that I've learned in my life is that sometimes the effects of the good that we do is not known to us, maybe never is known to us. I've frequently said, especially in the last 7 or 8 months, that I am the most fortunate of men, because many people that I was fortunate and privileged to command have come back to me and have given me examples of the things that we worked together to do, the things that we said, the things that we meant, and the things that we did, all helped to shape them in a way which has been good for their family, for the people around them, for the organizations and the place in which they live, the community in which they live. So, that's it. We do the best that we can in our little part of the world and count on that to spread out further. So that's what I have to say about that. And now we're going to carry on with some things going on in the world. And one of the things that came to me in the last week was a series of articles. You all know that I either subscribe to or have available to me a number of journals which talk about world politics, maritime politics, matters marine, matters military, and matters Coast Guard. And in several of those outlets came essentially the same information, and that has to do with a newly formed and yet being formed Arctic strategy. I believed for all of the time since I became involved in the ice business, which came to me somewhat late in my career. I did not come up through the icebreaker fleet like many people who are fortunate enough to and privileged enough to become icebreaker captains. I did not come into it until somewhat later in my career. I was very much involved in the search and rescue business, law enforcement, the enforcement of international laws and treaties. And so it was only sort of in the last half of my career that I became involved with operations in the ice. But from the first day that I started to break into McMurdo Station and realized and started to learn about the geopolitics of Antarctica, that I came to realize that the North, the Arctic, and the South, the Antarctic, provide both wonderful places for scientific research, in particular in Antarctica and in the Arctic, for human commerce. And that human commerce in the Arctic, because it goes across the top of the world and can be a shortcut from one side of the world to the other without having to go around through the Panama Canal. And in a minute, I'm going to tell you a story of my particular involvement in that. Also means that there is an incredible amount of competition which is backed by governments, competition which is backed by very well-funded commercial organizations. And for it not to become, at the same time, a military battleground or a political battleground is going to take a great deal of attention on the part of the operators, the part of the politicians, and the part of world businesses. So this particular article has to do with the American position in the Arctic, and it has come within the last 30 years only to truly to the attention of the politicians in this country as a result of the softening of the ice, such that we may have longer navigation seasons in the North, and in particular in what is called the Northeast Passage across the top of Siberia from Murmansk in the west to Vladivostok in the east. So the theme of this particular strategy is that there be a regular American presence, and not just because we have the state of Alaska, but an American presence in international waters in the Arctic. And when I became the ice boss as my twilight tour in Coast Guard headquarters for Commandant Jim Gracie, who was a wonderful supporter of the Coast Guard operations in the ice. When I became when I took that job, I came to realize that it was going to require a great deal of constant attention on the part of the operators in order for the politicians to make it happen. And unfortunately and unhappily, and I'm going to say that and put this on a personal basis, that when I lost control of this in my own little piece of Coast Guard world, which expanded itself into every place where there was ice, where the Coast Guard broke that ice, that once I lost control of that, And there was not the push of the warming and softening of the ice that we have today. And so we are way, way behind. And one of these days, the Russian bear or the Chinese are going to press down on us in a place where we are not going to be able to respond. So part of this new strategy is that there will be a regular American presence. It is going to require both Coast Guard presence using ships which are not suitable for heavy ice work. It's going to require naval vessels which are not suitable for heavy ice work. And one of the elements of this is the possibility that the Navy will fly a P-8 long-range patrol aircraft out of the Coast Guard base at Kodiak, the Coast Guard Air Station at Kodiak. I don't know whether the runways are long enough to accommodate these aircraft. I don't know whether they can take the weight. All I know is that when I saw this particular element, that seemed to me to be a good inter-service relationship where one service provides a facility from which another service can operate. So, the theme for this is called now being called the Blue Arctic. I would caution that we not be too hasty at looking for that blue water. We have a long way to go if this warming trend continues. But because this warming trend is a relatively short one in our geologic history, it could reverse just as quickly. So, again, I'm not a scientist. I'm just that simple sailor who can barely read or write. But I would not be surprised if the temperatures start to go back down in the wintertime and start to get those really super hard freezes. Anyway, you can be sure that your captain up in the captain's chair from the Voice of Vashon 101.9, I almost forgot that, 101.9 on the FM band and voiceofvashon.org, streamed all over the world from Stockholm and one end of the world to Singapore and the other. And one of the little side issues that the Secretary of the Navy in an article which was connected to Blue Arctic was the possibility that now this Secretary of the Navy, of course, is going to be without a job on the 20th of January. And what the Biden administration is going to do about this particular problem, I suspect that it is not quite at the top of the pile. But the current incumbent Secretary of the Navy said, we may even go to Finland and buy icebreakers in Finland. I will have a commentary on Finnish icebreakers sometime in the future should that come to pass. The Wärtsilä company builds wonderful, very strong breakers. And you can always tell a Finnish icebreaker, most of them look like they are a big floating apartment building. So we'll talk some more about that. Should we see Finnish icebreakers, it would require a lot of changes in regulations and statutes about buying and building building ships for our own purposes, for our own military purposes outside the United States. Another subject for another time. The port of Cork, which was called Queenstown in southern Ireland, the south of Ireland, was the port of embarkation for thousands and thousands of Irish people fleeing the potato famine. In my own family, my Mary's family, the Redmond family, came from Ireland in 1840, and I took her to Ireland, and I took her to the Immigration Museum, and we were able to find the records of her family leaving County Wexford. County Wexford is in the south of the Irish Republic, right next to County Waterford, where all of the beautiful glass is made. County Wexford is the county right next to that, the Redmonds all came from there. And 1 year I took Mary to Ireland, and I took her to County Wexford, and we found Redmonds. That was her maiden name. And we found Redmonds everywhere. We found Redmond Square. We found Redmond Road, Redmond Hospital. And even the young lady who delivered our rental car was a Redmond, no doubt a distant relationship. So I mentioned Cork, Cobh, Queenstown, not only because of the connection to my family by marriage, but also because they just had and have now gotten contained a huge fire. Waterfront fires are particularly difficult to manage. If the piers catch on fire, we still have many, many piers which are constructed, including creosoted pilings. And we have a lot of them right here around the magical isle of Vashon, pilings that were coated in creosote. We don't do it anymore. But the creosote was to keep the pilings from rotting as long as possible. And in ports all over the world, there are still millions and millions of these pilings down there. And when they catch on fire, they're very difficult to extinguish. That's why every large port has a couple, at least one and usually more, fireboats, which are designed especially with very large fire monitors, which are able to direct streams of water down underneath the pilings, down into the pilings to put the fire out. So fortunately and happily, that fire has now been contained. Let us hope that the museum, which contains all of those immigration records, which are invaluable for genealogical researchers for so many people, so many families in this country who are related, whose ancestors came from Ireland, and so many of them came in the 1840s to escape the potato famine, which started in 1840. So well done to the fire department in the Irish Republic. Good news from the Great Lakes. I love to talk about the Great Lakes. The job that I had as the commander for Coast Guard forces with my headquarters in Sault Ste. Marie in the American Sioux was the best shore job that I had. It was a wonderful place to live and work. And of course, the winter before I went as the commander, I was the captain of my Northwind and broke ice that entire winter. So the good news is that for the first time since 1983, we have the launch of a new Laker. She will be carrying iron ore, coal, gravel, anything that can be moved in bulk. And she's being built for the Interlake Steamship Company, which is a company that's over 100 years old, and her name, we even know what her name is. She's going to be the Mark W. Barker, and she's built in the shipyard in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin, which is now called Fincantieri, which is an interesting thing in itself, because Fincantieri is an Italian company, a very large Italian shipyard corporation, and they bought the shipyard in Sturgeon Bay. They carried over their name to it, but it is a completely American yard. It is a completely American labor, and they have now built the first of the completely American Lakers, and I, for one, am really looking forward to seeing her when she's completed. They're welding together the midship section, the bow and the stern, and to see what she looks like and how she operates. The same company, Interlake, owns a very interesting vessel named Badger. Badger is not only a steamship, but she is the last coal-fired steamship, so far as I'm aware, on the lakes, and may well be the last coal-fired vessel in the American Merchant Marine. And she goes back and forth in the summertime from Ludington, Mission to Manitowoc, Wisconsin. She cuts many hours. That way you don't have to drive all the way around Lake Michigan. Although that's a very interesting drive. Takes a long time. Not as interesting or as scenic as driving all the way around Lake Superior, by the way. There is a road that goes all the way around Lake Superior. And if you have a lot of days and you have a very comfortable recreational vehicle, it's a highly recommended trip that you take. So Badger has been saved yet once again. She's going to be running this winter, or this summer rather. And you can go up to the Great Lakes. And if you decide that this summer you're not going to go to Europe or to Asia, but you're going to stay in country, I highly recommend some time in the American Great Lakes, particularly up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. So Badger is going to be running again. She herself is over 60 years old, and she looks a lot like our Coho. For those of you who are Northwest people, she looks a lot like our Coho. She has a completely different paint scheme, and she, of course, being coal-fired, is she has special scrubbers to mitigate the exhaust. But it's interesting that she is, first of all, A, still running, B, still certificated, C, is over 60 years old, and D, is still coal-fired. So catch Badger while you can. She seems to be, I've seen a photograph of her, she looks like she's being well loved and well cared for, so get yourself up there and take a do some time in our own American Great Lakes. So here's my quick story about freedom of navigation. We've been doing a number of freedom of navigation missions down in the South China Sea, and these are missions where we use our own ships to go through international waters that are disputed by other countries. When I was the ice boss, I had Polar Sea over in the Greenland side, and I needed to get her over to the Alaska side. And I wanted to take her across the Northwest Passage. Now, parts of the Northwest Passage are in international waters, at least so we claim. The Canadians claim that they are inside Canadian territorial waters. So I went over to my counterpart in the State Department, and I said, I need to move Polar Sea from Greenland to the Arctic, and I want to take her through the Northwest Passage. And my colleague over there was a gentleman by the name of Tucker Scully, and Tucker was well known in Antarctic circles because he, along with my friend Dr. John Heap, who was my director at the Scott Polar Research Institute, Tucker, John, and a lot of other people, but those are the two that I knew very well, were involved in the creation of the Antarctic Treaty. And I went over to the main state, to the State Department, and I said, Tuck, I need to move Polar Sea. And he said, well, Captain Joe, you know that part of the Northwest Passage is considered to be Canadian internal waters, and we've not done a freedom of navigation mission before for a long time, so let's go ahead and tell the Canadians we're coming through as a courtesy and get the mission set up. So I went back, and I briefed my boss, who briefed the commandant, and everybody was happy with the operation, everybody except the Canadians. And when the Canadians got wind of this, it became a challenge to their sovereignty. And this went back and forth and back and forth. And State Department, it worked its way in the State Department hierarchy up to the Secretary and the Commandant, and the Secretary of Transportation. We were under transportation in those days. All had meetings about this. And it was decided to go ahead and continue to advise the Canadians, but not ask their permission. So you might well wonder why a captain who is not really very high in the hierarchy, he may be high with his own crew when he's the captain, he's the skipper next to God, but when you were talking about Washington, D.C. in 06, a captain equivalent to a bird colonel in the Air Force, the Marine Corps, or the Army, is not particularly high. And so why would he be the one who would be making this decision? Well, it was considered then, and as I consider it today, an operational decision, not a political one. And it was the State Department that said, let us tweak the maple leaf just a little bit. And so that's how it became from a operational decision, which was well within my authority to make and to have the orders written for my captain to go ahead and start coming across through the Northwest Passage. So I said to the State Department, I said, all right, Tuck, here's how we'll sweeten the pot. I've already invited the Canadian Coast Guard to send as many people as observers as they would like. And as we go past each one of the native villages, we will invite the leadership of that village to come aboard and ride to the next village. And then the Canadians can figure out how to get them back home. So that's what we did. And there was grumbling from such places as the Toronto Globe and Mail. If you want to do a little bit of forensic newspaper trawling, you can go into the Toronto Globe and Mail archives, morgue, and find the series of articles about this, in which I am freely quoted as saying that this was an operational decision, that the Canadians are welcome to go along, that many have already accepted the invitation. After all, Polar Sea is a big ship, lots of room. We'll give all of the Canadian icebreaker captains that go with us full bridge privileges, except, of course, sitting in the captain's chair. And that's the way we did it. And but there was constant grumbling from the home of the maple leaf, the way that the Canadian Coast Guard had a wonderful time. They were all the captains were allowed to actually handle the ship. And so you can find this particular story if you want to do some digging into the Toronto Globe and Mail. But I tell this story because a lot of times sound operational decisions made by relatively junior people get themselves turned into political cause celeb, which is where they never should have been, which just gives strength to what I have said many, many times. If the world were run by sailors, just think how sorted out a place this would be. So I'm going to talk next week, and I have a wonderful friend coming on with me to talk about fisheries and about the departure of the United Kingdom, my beloved United Kingdom, from the European Union. And Bill West, who has been with me before, is going to be my friend, and we're going to talk about this and a number of other subjects. But in the meantime, with all of these things roiling and spoiling and going on all around us, lose not heart. Keep faith. Keep the faith. Fear not, for I am with you in all things. We all know what our duty is. We all falter at performing that duty sometimes, and yet we carry on, and that's exactly what we all of us have to do. For those of you who have people for whom you are responsible and accountable, watch out for them during the week. We will meet here again one more time a week from today, right here from the captain's chair with your Captain Joe, on station and watching properly. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. As the Kiwis say, kia ora, and as our Hawaiians say, aloha.